And you're on RN with Michael Cathcart. This is Books and Arts. Well, pictures don't have to be big to be important. In Australian Portraits this week, radio producer and arts journalist Fiona Gruber and Angus Trumbull, the director of the National Portrait Gallery in Canberra, talk about the small picture. And Fiona meets the well-known Australian book designer and, as we discover, smartphone portraitist, Chong.
Today we thought we'd look at small pictures, small in size, literally miniatures, but also in the context of modest ambition and even more modest opportunity. We're also going to meet Chong. He's a contemporary miniaturist and his medium is a smartphone. But first, Angus, miniatures, they're very personal, aren't they?
Absolutely. Miniatures sum up what you've just described. The size of the miniature is essentially its defining aspect. But of course, a miniature is designed to be held in the palm of the hand. And in a way, its scale and intimacy goes hand in hand with the actual act of handling the miniature.
Whenever I think of miniatures, I think of love tokens.
Absolutely.
And it could be the love of someone living, like your fiancé, or it could be a loved one who's died that you keep in a locket
often in the British and Australian colonial contexts, many miniatures were made of naval officers to be held
for
to
mother
the bosom,
back home.
Yes, held to the bosom in Plymouth or Newcastle or wherever as a reminder, together with an elaborately arranged lock of hair on the reverse. In a sense, that's the kind of underlying market. The miniature provides us with the starting point for the small picture in the sense of smallness, of scale, as you said, modesty of ambition. The miniature also provides a kind of more broad-ranging model for intimacy in portraiture, privacy in portraiture, portraits that there is absolutely no intention of displaying to a wider public. Georgiana McCrae comes to mind perhaps more than any other in this context as being a painter who was really perhaps propelled towards small scale and indeed miniature scale, not only out of necessity but out of actual training. Georgiana McCrae is one of the most intriguing of the colonists who predate the gold rush in Victoria. She was the illegitimate daughter of the Duke of Gordon, one a great Scottish nobleman, and her slightly ambiguous social standing meant that although she was raised in the household of the Duke under the rather resentful supervision of the Duchess, eventually it was arranged for her to marry Andrew McCrae, who was in due course encouraged to migrate.
And he was a Scottish lawyer, wasn't he?
Scottish lawyer. But poor old Andrew was hopeless, really, and all of his enterprises in Victoria tended to amount to not very much. But he was also very socially ambitious and quite determined that his wife, Georgiana, would not practice art as a profession. I mean, he was insistent that she could not hang out her shingle. But she, like all women of her standing, she received instruction in painting and was really breathtakingly good at it.
She was also really beautiful, wasn't she?
Yes, and her own self-portrait from before her marriage is an exquisite work, and it really is a sort of the quintessence of what we're talking about. Georgiana, dark-haired, she almost encapsulates the sense of a Jane Austen heroine. It's a stunning work.
How big is it?
Oh, tiny. I mean, it's of miniature scale. And most of the other miniatures that she produced are equally intimate and of family and friends.
But when they lived down the peninsula, she was very friendly with the local Burrurong people down there. I love these two little pictures of a young girl called Eliza and her husband, Ben Benji. And these are just beautiful little pictures, aren't they? Because they're really intimate portraits of just two people who were part of their lives. Her children, Georgiana's children, played with their children. They all went fishing and they learnt the language. Georgiana kept a lexicon, didn't she, of Aboriginal words?
Yes. And in this respect, those works and that world that she crafted for herself into which her art is decanted, really.
A
very private world, a very closed world, not entirely of her own choosing, could not contrast more with works that, although similar in scale, i.e. very small, were precisely the opposite in the sense that they were intended for public consumption, namely the paintings of Louisa Ann Meredith of Northern Tasmania and, of course, Teresa Walker in South Australia.
Now, she was a woman who could make a career as an artist in the early days of Australia.
Yes, indeed. Teresa Walker arrived in Adelaide in 1837, just a year after the establishment of the colony.
She had a sister, Martha Barclay, didn't she, who was also she was a painter. And so both sisters arrived as professional artists. But Teresa Walker, she made wax medallions, didn't she?
Yes. I mean, this is very interesting too, because you have the miniature tradition, but you also have the, as it were, soft media, the media that are associated with women's work in the long Western tradition. And these wax medallions belong very much in that category.
So Teresa Walker and her sister painting intimate portraits of people and creating wax medallions, that was acceptable because they were women, is that right?
But it's also, in the colonial context, they filled, of course, an important void. They had a huge potential that women artists elsewhere didn't have in being among a handful of the only artists in the colony.
So people could overlook the fact that they weren't wearing trousers.
But, I mean, it's precisely for this reason that she comes to execute the medallions of Sir George and Lady Grey.
Oh, yes. Now tell me about them, because this is probably the most poisonous marriage in early Australia, isn't it?
It's pretty great. I mean, he was a governor of South Australia, and he and Lady Grey sailed part of the way, at which point, I forget whether...
Well, they got married in Western Australia, but it was unhappy from the start. They had a child who died. Sir George Grey blamed his wife for the death of the child. She had a nervous breakdown, went back to England. And I think this was after they'd gone to New Zealand, then he followed her. But on the journey back, she wrote a flirtatious letter to a fellow passenger on board. And Sir George Grey was so angry that, according to the ship's doctor, he said, "Either Sir George will kill himself or he will kill his wife unless she is put off at Rio de Janeiro." And she was. And they didn't see each other for 36 years.
But the reconciliation was, though attempted, unsuccessful 35 years hence.
That's right. And I think Queen Victoria was involved because she'd heard about... She thought it was a romantic story that this couple had been separated for so many years. And when they did get together, in their late 70s, I think, at the time, the excitement got too much for them and they both died.
And love will tear us apart again. Love will tear us apart.
So we've talked about Teresa Walker and her wax medallions. We've talked about Georgiana McCrae and her exquisite miniatures and small paintings. Do people make these anymore today? It seems a very outmoded form of art.
People were producing miniatures right through to recent times and still do. But I think the demand for bespoke miniatures, portraits of loved ones, has diminished practically to zero.
Well, nowadays you'd have it on your phone, you'd have it in your wallet.
Exactly, or in your passport or on your screen as a thumbnail icon.
Funny you should say that. Chong, an award-winning book designer and artist, draws portraits on his smartphone. Hello, Chong.
How are you, Fiona?
I'm very well. You carry on the miniature tradition. I mean, it's an old tradition, but in a very new form in the way that you do it.
Yes, it's about 500 years old. We take it back to pre-Elizabethan times. And it's come back because we all have these wonderful devices now called smartphones. So the original use of the miniature was as a keepsake or as a gift. The way I'm using it is really for to scratch an itch, really. Art is a lifelong itch that you scratch. And I can't think of anything more erotic than the face and the neck. And so I'm doing it really because it turns me on. And there's no need for anyone else to see it unless they have seen it and want to have it, which is fine. I'm not precious about it. But, you know, it's not necessarily for dissemination or exhibition or anything.
But you do have exhibitions.
I have. But as I say, it's not really the point of it.
I see. So you find it erotic. Is it part of that eroticism doing it without people knowing?
You're talking about a certain kind of kink inflection.
Well, a certain voyeurism, a sense of secrecy.
Here's the thing. There's nothing more full of humanness than a face. But can you imagine people letting you look at their face for a long time? It's very disconcerting. So to be polite all round, one watches without actually indicating that you are.
So how do you go about it? Do you have a stylus?
No, I'm very stripped down, and I only use my bare finger. And I put it right on the glass screen, and I dab away at it so that people think I'm sort of OCD, I suppose.
Are they always in colour, Chong?
The program affords colour, so absolutely you use it.
Maybe you should tell us what the program is.
It's called Brushes. Here it is. I'm showing you now. You see this little tab here? It gives you a colour choice. And if you move this lever here, it gives you density and paleness. So it is, it's purely a technological circumstance.
But it does share quite a few of the characteristics of a miniature, doesn't it?
It is literally a miniature, yes. Except instead of ivory or a bit of vellum, it's a matrix of pixels that only exist. Who knows? I don't understand pixels, really. Code 11000111.
Now, who do you make portraits of?
The people within sight. I regularly drew my late father-in-law because we used to go out for coffee every morning.
Right, so anybody and everybody, when you're on the train, when you're on a park bench at a party?
Usually more for a small gathering or quite often at talks or lectures. I have drawn, among other people, a whole series of writers, some of whom are the poets Les Murray and Gig Ryan. I have drawn Chris Wallace Crabb from the front and the back. I have drawn the wonderful Peter Porter several times, once in London. I don't know why they're poets, but maybe because they stand up and sort of recite rather than lecture.
And is the scale of it, as well as the portability and the convenience of you using your smartphone, is the size of your work really important?
It's intrinsic. It truly is a miniature because when you're drawing at the size of a phone screen, it means that the resolution is only as good as that scale. And to look at it at its best, you actually look at it as a miniature. It is a true miniature.
And do you print them out?
I do not.
So that they just exist in space between computers, talking a digital language.
It is a pure medium, yes. And maybe that's one of the things I like about it. It's quite a discreet way of doing a drawing.
And you can see some of Chong's portraits on our website. Thank you, Chong.
Thanks very much.
She found your picture in my phone. She found your picture in my phone. She said she needs a little time to be alone. Found your picture in my phone.
So next time someone sitting opposite you starts to fiddle with their smartphone, they might be painting a portrait. And wasn't that a sad story about George and Lady Grey? I've never heard that one before. That was episode 7 of our series Australian Portraits. And next Tuesday, arts journalist Fiona Gruber and Angus Trumbull from the National Portrait Gallery in Canberra will be back to tell us all about artists and sitters. And as Fiona said, you can find images and details of all the stories in that series on our website.